Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Southern California and earned a Doctor of Education in Psychology from the University of Northern Colorado. For the last 35 years, he has held many senior leadership positions at the University of Georgia, Purdue University, Arizona State University, and the College of Charleston. In July 2014, he became the sixth president of Oakland University. His name, Dr. George Hind, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Jack Krasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. George Hind, the sixth president of Oakland University. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, Jack, thank you very much for the honor of being on your show and having an opportunity to sing the praises of Oakland University and this exciting environment in which we reside.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Certainly. I grew up in a military family. My father was an officer in the Air Force, and I was born in Portland, Oregon, but very shortly thereafter, we had an opportunity as a family to move to Rome, Italy. My father was part of the air attaché in Rome, and my first memories actually are living in Rome, Italy. I do remember going to a preschool and speaking some Italian. And it was an absolutely wonderful way to grow up. From there, we moved on to Southern California, and where we lived there for some of my elementary years, early elementary years, and then it was off to a new post in Hawaii, where I went to Hanahaole, a school in downtown Honolulu. And I remember fondly my parents picking me up on Friday afternoons from school, rather than taking the bus home, and we would go down, and I would wander around Waikiki before it was developed into the tourist mecca it is today, catching frogs and having a Coke and buying a cheeseburger and just basically entertaining myself and having a wonderful time.
Doing the things that most college presidents get to do.
That's exactly right. So my early years were really, I think, influenced by living overseas and living in a different culture. And I think that's one of the reasons I so appreciate the opportunity to be here in Michigan, where we really are a multicultural metropolitan area.
Doctor, what's the biggest thing Mom taught you, and what's the biggest thing Dad taught you?
Well, it's interesting. My mother certainly was, she was very linguistically gifted, taught me a love for the language. Certainly reading was high on the list of activities that we did together during my early years. And I think that instilled in me a real significant appreciation for literature, for language. And I think that's translated into appreciating the opportunity to communicate and sing the praises of what we do here at Oakland. But at the same time, for my father was very engaged, obviously, as a military officer. And I think what I learned from him was the notion of doing the best job you possibly can in the tasks that have been assigned to you. And I certainly remember when the promotion list came out, how that always generated interest in our household. And so it's probably somewhat ironic that I end up in an academic environment where one is promoted through various ranks based on their accomplishments.
You spent 24 years from 1979 through 2003 at the University of Georgia. Talk to us about the University of Georgia and the Georgia Bulldogs.
Oh, it's hard not to talk about the Georgia Bulldogs coming from Georgia. But I went to University of Georgia relatively early in my career. And I think at that time, at least from my perspective, it was a relatively sleepy Southeastern university. But certainly during the 24 years that I was there, it not only rested somewhat on its laurels as a football university, but certainly ratcheted up the research profile of the university. And I was fortunate to be there at a time when the research that I was interested in was very well supported by the vice president for research, the president, and certainly the dean of the college in which I worked. And it was just a terrific place to be. By the time I left University of Georgia, after 24 years being there, it was considered and still is, of course, a major research university in the country with a tremendous amount of external funding. It's a land-grant institution. People may not know that. And it has had an incredible impact on agriculture and the booming economy in the Atlanta area and certainly Georgia in general.
From 2003 to 2007, you were the dean of the College of Education at Purdue University, the Purdue Boilermakers. Talk to us about Purdue.
Purdue was an absolutely wonderful opportunity. As you say, I went there in 2003. Our family moved there, and I had some young daughters, and they did their elementary years there in West Lafayette. Had an absolutely fantastic experience, and I will say it was my first opportunity to live in the Midwest. And both my wife and I appreciated greatly the values, the lifestyle, the commitment to education that we experienced in West Lafayette and Indiana. And I think that probably had some impact on taking a look at the opportunity here in Michigan. But having said that, I was at Purdue University during the Martin Jiske years. And Martin Jiske was the president of Purdue University, and when I got there, launched a $1.3 billion fundraising campaign. So as a dean, I had an opportunity to work with the faculty to develop strategic priorities and be very much engaged in fundraising. And during the period of time I was there, the campaign was completed successfully at $1.7 billion. And I learned to really appreciate the impact that philanthropy and strategic plans can have on the growth of a university and achieving its strategic priorities.
Purdue's current president is its former Indiana governor, Mitch Daniels, quite a spectacular man as well.
Yes, very accomplished. Mitch Daniels was the governor during part of the time that I was in Indiana, and he was very, very accomplished. He had a strong commitment to moving Indiana forward economically, and really did quite a bit along that lines. And, of course, now he's president of Purdue University. He's fiscally conservative, and so my recollection is they have not raised tuition in the last couple of years. But at the same time, the university continues to garner acclaim both nationally and internationally for the science and especially the engineering programs.
We're talking to Dr. George Hind. When we come back, we'll ask him about his tenure at the College of Charleston. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. George Hind, who from 2010 through 2014 served as provost and executive vice president of academic affairs for the College of Charleston. Tell us about the College of Charleston.
Well, the College of Charleston was a very unique experience for me, one that was absolutely outstanding. I had an opportunity to join the college as provost, and many people don't really quite understand what a provost does, but if you look up the word provost in the dictionary, what you'll find is that one of the definitions is that it's the keeper of the jailhouse or dungeon keys. And I'm sure some of the faculty think that the provost does have the keys to the kingdom, but that's not quite the case. The provost is responsible for all of the academic programs at a university and is typically the second person in charge right under the president. The opportunity I had at Charleston was great, and ironically, I had an opportunity to work with George Benson, who had been at University of Georgia prior to coming to the College of Charleston, and he was the dean of the Terry School of Business. So I was able to join him as his provost. And one of the ironies of being there was one of our other vice presidents was named George Watt, and he is still there. So we had three Georges in the leadership of the College of Charleston. Coincidentally, our mailing address was on George Street. So it was clearly a very unique constellation of things that drew three Georges together on George Street at the College of Charleston. But having said that, it was a fabulous experience because the college is, has about 10,500 students, about 1,500 graduate students, and is well-respected, certainly in the state of South Carolina, but also in the southeastern region as an outstanding liberal arts comprehensive university. Strong commitment to the liberal arts. It's about 248 years old, 13th oldest institution in the country, the oldest south of Virginia. And so it has quite a storied past. It's a beautiful college in the sense that the Cistern Yard is where everybody gathers, and it's been there for literally hundreds of years. But the interesting thing about it is that the campus is in downtown Charleston, but you would never know that you were in a downtown area because there are so many beautiful oak trees covered with Spanish moss that make it truly a wonderful walking institution as well as a walking city. So it was a fantastic experience. We had a great deal of opportunity for philanthropy. We established a number of programs that I was very proud of, a Jewish studies program, a degree program in African American studies, and we explored the opportunity of developing some PhD programs while I was there. Also had an opportunity while I was at the College of Charleston to work on encouraging our deans to develop their own strategic plan and get very involved in philanthropy. And we had quite a bit of success in that regard.
My sister's lived in Charleston, South Carolina for 25 years with her family.
Oh, my God.
Everybody that's down there loves it. So you left Charleston and you've come to Rochester, Michigan. What drew you to Oakland University?
Well, to be really honest with you, my wife and I have a daughter that is now in college, actually at the College of Charleston, and another daughter that is a senior in high school in the Charleston area, and she will be going off to college. So we were facing the opportunity of being empty nesters, and we thought it would be a great time for a bit of an adventure. And it was time to take a look at some opportunities that were coming my way. And one in particular that I found fascinating and I'm very glad I took a serious look at it was the position here at Oakland University. I had known of Oakland University through some of the research I'd been doing during my research active part of my career, and was familiar with the faculty here, and they had a really outstanding reputation. So that first drew me to taking a look at Oakland University, and then when I looked at it in more detail, I was impressed about a couple of things. One is that how well it was situated in the metropolitan area of Detroit. And, of course, I think most people here know that we get a very significant number of our students from Macomb counties, Oakland County, and Wayne County. And in the context of that, we are truly a comprehensive doctoral research university. And one way to think about Oakland is we have every academic program pretty much that you might think about with the exception of law. We have a School of Medicine, we have a School of Engineering and Computer Science, Education, Business Administration, Health Science, and so on, including a very vibrant and very, very successful honors program here at Oakland. And we had a couple of things that were also a draw as far as we were concerned. One is having now lived in the Midwest from our Indiana experience, we were very open to return to the Midwest. And I think second of all, it was very clear that there was an opportunity here to build a leadership team that would help develop a strategic plan and move us forward in a campaign that would help us reach some of our strategic objectives. We're in the process of searching for several new deans, and we're looking to the deans that are here and the new deans that join us in marshaling the faculty and marshaling our resources to really move forward in some very, very exciting directions.
We're talking to Dr. George Hind, who since July of 2014 has been the president of Oakland University. Doctor, Oakland University is a hidden gem. It's under the radar. How do you plan on raising its profile?
Well, that's a very good question, and one that I've received a number of people have asked me. Is I think there is a general agreement, as you said, that Oakland is a hidden gem. And I think the challenge and the opportunity for me is to, shall we say, unveil that gem. And I think to do that, we need to have an exciting and inspiring strategic plan on how we intend to move forward. We need to have the kind of academic programs and successful research programs of our faculty that we can highlight as truly being unique to the metropolitan area so that Oakland becomes everybody's first choice, not a second or third choice. And one of the things we're going to do to move in that direction is we will probably building some more residence facilities so that we can encourage more students to live on campus. We would like to dent the notion that we are a commuter institution. We have students that live on campus, and we have a very active student life. So we think living on campus is a very high priority for us. Our Honors College, we compete very successfully in acquiring some of the best students in the state and beyond to our Honors College. In fact, we compete toe-to-toe with Michigan and Michigan State University in the attraction of some extraordinarily well-qualified students. And I think as we move forward, we'll be developing a strategic master plan for communication that will help us get the word out as to just what an incredible gem is right here in everybody's backyard. We're going to also be moving forward in becoming more engaged in our own community. You may have heard that we're working with Mayor Waterman and Pontiac in a number of initiatives to see if we can't have develop more partnerships with the Pontiac area. And we'll also take some of the successful programs that we have in Pontiac and move toward engaging Detroit as well. So we have the aspiration of being more engaged with our community. We intend to foster and support more significant research profile. But we also want to be considered a very student-centered and student-friendly university. And I think you'll be hearing a lot more of that as time goes by.
We're talking to Dr. George Hind. When we come back, we'll ask him about the new Hugh and Nancy Elliott Carillon Tower. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything's Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. George Hind. And recently, you just inaugurated a $6.7 million Carillon Tower that was donated by Hugh and Nancy Elliott, 151 foot tall, 49 bells, and at noon every day, it plays the national anthem right outside your window. What's that like?
The Carillon Towers, as referred to as the Elliott Tower, is an absolutely extraordinary landmark on campus. As you noted, Hugh and Nancy Elliott contributed their own resources entirely to build the Carillon Towers. And it sits right in the middle of campus, somewhat in between our academic buildings and our residence halls, and right adjacent to our arena where our basketball team plays. And it has not only become a landmark, but it has become, in my view, a spiritual center for campus. certainly it is providing, I think it's a way station for giving people directions, but it's also become a gathering place for a variety of reasons. First of all, the way that it was constructed, it is designed to attract people to come, to sit, to contemplate, to meet, to talk about important things that are going on during the day. During the summer, when it's warmer, we have a fountain that comes on. And as you've noted, the carillon bells do chime, and they're absolutely incredibly beautiful. And you can hear them from all over campus, from the first tee on the golf course to the parking lots that are on the periphery of the campus. One of the interesting things about the carillon towers is that when it was dedicated on dedication day, we had Jim Lentini is our provost, but he's also a composer, and he composed a special piece that was played on the carillon towers during the dedication ceremony. And it truly was a beautiful piece. It was wonderful because we had set up a video of the carillon being played, and you can see that down on the ground level. It was really quite a spectacular day. But it's just evidence that our supporters are continuing to invest in Oakland University. As you know, we've built a new $76 million engineering building. We just finished off a Oakview, a new residence hall for 500 beds, which, by the way, 900 beds filled up in the first 15 minutes once we opened up our applications for living in our residence halls. So we're providing new facilities for our students and our faculty, and enlivening the campus through the Elliott Tower being the most recent example. But also we'll be engaging in a campus master plan to look at other things we might do across campus to make it truly an inviting campus, one that supports an active student life, a residence life, and certainly all the academic programs that we have here at Oakland University.
Oakland University is 50 years old. Its enrollment is up 32% in the last decade, 100,000 alumni. It's Michigan's eighth largest public university, 1,443 acres, and 65 to 70% of your full-time students, Doctor, are also working. Talk to us about your students.
The students here are absolutely fantastic. Our academic profile has actually increased over the years as well. We know that we're attracting very well-qualified students here on campus. Some of the statistics that are equally as important are the fact that we have increased our retention rate. Our retention rate is one, I think, metric that we use to determine, are we attracting students? Are we bringing them back in their sophomore year? And that retention rate, as that goes up, we're now at 78% retention rate our first year. In other words, that means that 78% of the students that come in their freshman year show up their second year. That bodes well for our students because it also projects out that our graduation rate, our 4-, 5-, and 6-year graduation rate, will actually increase. And having more students living on campus is a very important part of that, because we know that students that live on campus have a faster course toward graduation, they have a higher GPA, they're more engaged, and they just basically do better. So we're going to try and ramp up the number of students that live on campus, as I said earlier, but We should be proud of our students here, I think, at Oakland University. About 43% of our students are transfer students. They come from the surrounding counties, as I mentioned. And we're going to continue to attract students who are first-time ever students. So we want those freshmen on campus that have not gone to college. But we also want to reach out to Macomb County, certainly within Oakland and down into Wayne, to make sure that our transfer students feel that this is a welcome academic opportunity for them as they pursue their college degree.
The only constant in life today is change. And as such, there's been an explosion of online and hybrid courses. Talk to us about that change.
Absolutely. And Actually, we have some a very strong commitment to offering online courses and programs. Right now, about 10% of our courses are offered online or are in some version of a hybrid course. It's very interesting. If you look at the literature on online learning, students, no matter where they are, really do prefer to have some kind of face-to-face contact with their professors. So while we do have totally online programs and courses, we also have a number of hybrid courses. And hybrid courses may have the majority of the content provided online, but there's also face-to-face meetings with the faculty, perhaps every other week or in some other format as well. It's very interesting. There was and is a great deal of interest in offering online courses. Many people think that improves our reach to the community, and it does. But on the other hand, we have some very interesting data to say that many of our full-time students meaning students that are living on campus or are commuting to campus, taking a full course load are also taking an online course at the same time. So it seems to serve the needs of the students that maybe cannot come to campus, maybe cannot be fully engaged in a full load on campus, but it also seems to be serving the needs of the students who maybe couldn't pick up a class because of scheduling challenges or work challenges. So our online courses really do serve a wide variety of needs and aspirations.
The cost of a college degree is ever increasing. Student loans ever increasing. And more students are finding it tougher to come up with that money. What's the answer?
Well, that's a very good question. I know it's a concern that we all have, the cost of higher education. Back in the 1970s, 80s, some 70-odd percent of our budget was provided by the state. There was a very strong commitment by the state legislature to fund higher education. But now that has dwindled down here at Oakland University to only 18% of our budget. And at some of our sister institutions across the state, the amount of state support is even less than we receive here. Having said that, the implication simply is that if we're going to continue to offer that kind of high-quality education that students and their parents seem to desire, the only option we have is to fund that through tuition. Now, the tuition here at Oakland University is below the average in the state. We have, at this moment, we have a one-price-fits-all, so there's not an additional fee for parking, as an example, which, by the way, in many institutions, there's fees for parking and other services that are provided. We have a one-price fee. The important part of this is that we are below the state average on tuition. As you know, the governor has capped tuition increases to 2.8% this year, it takes about 2% every year just to cover basic inflationary costs. So that really does not give us much more revenue. Now, having said that, the cost of an average for a college degree is still an incredible investment. There's very good evidence to say that a four-year degree will result in more than $1 million in earned income over a lifetime. So the average student at Oakland University graduates with about $26,000, $27,000 in debt. Now, that's the average. Many students have no debt when they graduate, or they may have more. But the point to make here is that the debt that the students at Oakland carry is lower than the state average by several thousand dollars. Now, the reason it is that we have priced ourselves a little bit lower than some of the other institutions. We don't have a great number of fees that students have to pay. And I think the third point to make there is that we're encouraging our students to take full loads so that they graduate sooner. The sooner they graduate, typically the lower debt level that they carry. One other thing I will make a point here, and I think it bears consideration, is that if a student has an average debt, whether it's here or at some other institution, that debt is still an incredible investment in their future in terms of earning potential, job opportunities, and their lifetime earnings. So it is still the best possible investment a student can make.
We're talking to Dr. George Hind, and I'm Jack Rasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the sixth president of Oakland University, Dr. George Hind. Doctor, what has surprised you the most about Oakland University in these first 9 months as president?
What has surprised me the most about my stay here as the new president of Oakland University, I've been asked that question by a number of people. I have a couple of relatively low-level observations. One has been, and I realize this having been in Michigan only about 6 weeks or so, and that is Michiganders are incredibly loyal to the state of Michigan. I've lived in a number of other states, certainly in the southeast and out west, but I think I was really struck as I arrived here as to how loyal people are to Michigan, the importance of family, the importance of the environment, the cost of living, the networking, the sports opportunities and venues that are available, all seem to be very powerful powerful factors in the life here in Michigan. And coupled with that is a fascination with the fact that I've met many, many people, in fact, some of our board members, that are native Michiganders that have gone off, lived in other parts of the country or even other parts of the world, and have returned to Michigan because of that very strong desire and pride in the state of Michigan. They tend to come back because they have family here, because there are employment opportunities, because they appreciate the values that are inherent, I think, in the upper Midwest, and certainly the appreciation of the rich environment we have here, whether it's related to the different sports venues that we have in the Detroit area, or whether or not they can take a vacation in the upper peninsula to kind of get away from it all. It's that loyalty and appreciation of the state of Michigan that really took me by surprise. I had not anticipated that coming to Michigan.
If you want to learn more, www.oakland.edu. Doctor, you're surrounded with millennials every day. Talk to us about millennials.
The millennials, they keep changing. I think that's one of their characteristics. I think they have high expectations. But in my view, they're also very driven, I think, to find what we all aspire to, and that's to have a meaning in life. I think there's a little bit of impatience, generally speaking, in how fast that can be achieved. But on the other hand, one of the things that has truly impressed me, and I see this daily in the students here on campus, is how driven they are to really move themselves forward in some way that excites their passion. And in fact, when I think about students that may come to Oakland University or are thinking of coming to Oakland, or even the students that are here, one of the pieces of advice I always give them is find your passion. I think that's one of the underappreciated aspects of having an institution like Oakland in your backyard. It's a safe place to find one's passion. We, of course, require our students to take a variety of courses to eventually pick a major. But I think the important thing is that a student can come to a university, find their passion, and then convert that into a career path upon their graduation. In fact, I tell students that they really should try and have as wide an experience in their curriculum as they possibly can, because they may be surprised. They may have a passion for things they really never thought they might have a passion for, but if they come to Oakland or some other university, they may take a course that all of a sudden they realize this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. That's the value of coming and being a resident at a university or taking a full load of courses this year, exposed to different ideas, different ways of thinking that may excite you and move you in a career path that you never even anticipated.
The first new medical school in Southeast Michigan in 50 years, half a century, has recently opened. The Oakland University William Beaumont School of Medicine, 223 students are enrolled. Tell us about this new initiative.
This is absolutely a fantastic development for Oakland University and, frankly, for all of Southeast Michigan and the state of Michigan. The fact that we now have a School of Medicine, and it's taken, of course, more than 6 years to fully develop to the point where this May 15th we will have our first commencement with our first class of medical students who will be going on to residencies in the state of Michigan. We're very proud of that fact. We think our dean, Robert Fulberg, has done an absolutely incredible job bringing this School of Medicine on. And just recently, I'm sure you know, we've gotten the word out well, I think, that the Liaison Committee for Medical Education has awarded us full accreditation. So our graduates, as they move on, will, I think, represent us well. It's fascinating to me that our first graduating class has 47 students. One student out of our initial class delayed his graduation. He'll come back again next year after earning an MBA at one of the Ivy schools. So he will graduate with an MD degree and an MBA degree. These are truly exceptional students. Not only that, but I think everybody here locally has heard that we have what has been referred to as the kindness curriculum. The students in our School of Beaumont School of Medicine have their own personal development plans. They are attracted to our curriculum because we stress patient health is not just a presenting symptom that they come to the doctor. It is their mental health, their nutritional health, their physical health. So our students are really well prepared in treating patients as a whole person. And I think that manifests in a variety of different ways in the curriculum. And this has become it's gained us a lot of attention across the country because there has been a movement afoot to prepare what's been referred to as the humane physician, the physician who actually listens to a patient, spends time with the patient, gets to know them at a personal level. And that word has clearly got out across the country. For 100 openings in our School of Medicine this past year, we had over 6,000 applications. Not only that, our students are competing for residencies, both in the state of Michigan, mostly in the state of Michigan, and beyond. And we're hopeful that the budget cuts that are pending with regard to funding Medicare and residencies here in the state will not impact the number of residencies that are available, because there's very good evidence that a physician, 75% of physicians, end up practicing within 75 miles of where they do their residency. So having our students do their residencies here in the state of Michigan is very important in meeting the physician shortage in the state of Michigan.
If you want to learn more, www.oakland.edu. Dr. George Hine, paint us a picture, if you will, of what Oakland University will be in 2025.
I think you will find, as you drive up to Oakland University in 2025, that we have more green spaces. We have fewer parking lots on the periphery where you see acres of asphalt. You will see a beautiful campus that has more residence facilities, a vibrant student life. It is my view that Oakland University is well poised, and by 2025, we may well achieve this, to be the cultural center for the surrounding areas, and reaching out into Macomb County, certainly reaching out into Oakland, reaching up past Pontiac, so that we really have a performing arts center that attracts some of the best performers in the world. And certainly we are already doing that with our Meadowbrook Theater, with our festival, certainly with Meadowbrook Estate. So we do attract people here that go out of their way to come to the university, not just for their education, but also for the cultural events that we can offer here. I think we will be a cultural center in addition to being an outstanding research university that is student-centered by 2025.
Dr. George Hine, thanks a million for coming to Oakland University, Southeast Michigan. We are the better for it. Please keep up the great work.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.
Believe in yourself.